Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman, brought to you by globalresearch.ca. And my guest today, I'm delighted to have back Ramzi Baroud. Ramzi is a veteran Palestinian-American journalist. He's a former Al Jazeera producer. He's currently the founder and editor-in-chief of Palestine Chronicle. It is a vital resource for information on Israel, Palestine, the Middle East, and a lot more. PalestineChronicle.com, very easy to find. And again, it's a treasure trove of up-to-date information on that part of the world. Ramzi writes feature articles all the time, commentaries. He writes short stories. He's authored several books. He's working on a new one. Can't wait for it to be done so I can get Ramzi back on to talk about it. But his newest one, we've talked about it before on the program, it's titled The Second Palestinian Intifada, A Chronicle of a People's Struggle. So we want to talk about occupied Palestine, the siege in Gaza. Before we begin, let me just mention one thing. We will certainly highlight this topic in future programs because this will get more intense as the weeks pass on. I direct listeners' attention to the top featured article on Global Research today. It's written by my co-host, the editor of Global Research, Michelle Chosadovsky, and he titles it Martial Law and the Militarization of Public Health, the Worldwide H1N1 Flu Vaccination Program. Of course, that's swine flu. Manufactured in a laboratory, drug companies will reap hundreds of billions of dollars foisting experimental, untested, very dangerous, toxic vaccines on unsuspecting people who will go along with this thinking they're being protected when, in fact, anybody who submits to this vaccine will be harmed. Well, the profits for the drug companies are one of the big reasons for doing this. Another major one is we are literally going through an economic holocaust right now. The rubbish through the dominant media that things are getting better and so on, it is utter rubbish. And that'll get more apparent in the months ahead. Who knows when the next big storm will break the way it broke last fall. But it's out there, it's coming, and it'll happen. So what do? You change the subject, and that's another big goal of this program. You scare people to death, you distract them, you change the subject, and you get them to worry about their health and staying alive, and forget about the idea that they're losing their jobs, their homes, their savings, their futures. Well, priority one is saving your life. But what they don't know is they will harm their lives and well-being by submitting to this dangerous vaccine. In plain English, I sure as hell will not. And my strongest recommendation to everybody is absolutely refuse. Whether it's voluntary, mandatory, whatever it is, absolutely stay away from this stuff. It's poison. It's poison. We'll talk about it more in future programs. I've had two programs on it. And we'll absolutely come back to this because the hype machine is about to get into high gear. I expect that to happen in August, as we prepare for the fall flu season. Ramzi, I changed the subject very briefly because this is so important, and I'll do it again. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
Oh, Ramzi, it's great to have you back. Again, forgive me for taking that first segment. Let's take a break and come back, and then we'll get into today's subject. We'll be right back. Public Radio. Welcome back to the News Hour. On with Ramzi Baroud, editor-in-chief of Palestine Chronicle. Ramsey, as you know, the issue of Occupy Palestine is so core. It's of such importance to me. And when I open up Haaretz this morning and I see an article that extremists, young kids, plan to erect 11 new West Bank outposts. We want to talk about Gaza for sure, but they want to erect 11 new West Bank outposts to commemorate the 1946 operation during the British Mandate period, when 11 settlements were set up overnight, it says, in the northern Negev 2 years before Israel became Israel. Well, and they're timing it to when Secretary of Defense Gates shows up to go through the motions of discussing evacuating the so-called illegal outposts, with no mention of the fact that every single settlement is illegal. Your thoughts?
This is, I would assume that this is one of the Israel's most successful, perhaps, propaganda tricks that they have used for so many years. After they occupied the West Bank, with the rest of historic Palestine, East Jerusalem and the Gaza Strip and elsewhere in 1967, they kind of came up with this this illusion that there is there are actually different West Banks. A West Bank that is there to satisfy Israeli security needs. That is a West Bank that we can conquer, that we can use, we can erect settlements and establish facts on the grounds in order for us to basically secure the eastern borders of Israel. And this West Bank is a West Bank that has been championed pretty much by all factions in Israeli political society, but especially by the Labor Party. Later on, there was a new West Bank that was envisioned. That's a religious West Bank, a West Bank that is there to fulfill biblical fantasies and dreams. And that's a West Bank that was championed largely by the right-wing parties in Israel, the Likud and others. Between these two visions, Israel has not, not for a day, stopped building settlements in the West Bank, illegal settlements in violations of the Fourth Geneva Convention and various other international laws. Between these visions, not for a day did Israel ever stop expanding existing settlements, and so forth and so on. Therefore, for the last 41 years, we have been dealing with this very problem of settlements being erected under various guises, under various excuses, whether it's by extremist religious youth or by nationalistic governments or by so-called leftist governments in Israel. Now, the media handles this issue by making it sound as if there is indeed some sort of deviation within Israeli society or some sort of fracture within the Israeli political system, as if there is indeed Israelis who are against the settlement and Israelis who are pro the settlement. And here I am talking as far as the Israeli political establishment is concerned. In reality, none of this has happened, and I do not expect it to happen anytime soon. Settlements will be built and land will all continue to be confiscated. And frankly, Steve, it doesn't make a difference for a Palestinian farmer to lose his land to a nationalist Israeli or a religious Israeli zealot or a leftist Israeli. It's all going to add up to the exact same thing, confiscation of land and violation of international law.
Oh, absolutely, Ramsey. And this has gone on, of course, the West Bank and Gaza were occupied after the 1967 Six-Day War, and the land incrementally has been stolen ever since. So Haaretz this morning talks about 300,000 Israeli settlers. They don't mention the other 200,000 in stolen East Jerusalem land as Israel expands Jerusalem to a greater Jerusalem that steals more West Bank land. So Jerusalem moves from being, I don't know what size it was in square miles decades back, but it keeps growing and growing and growing as Israel incrementally takes more of the territory expands, more settlements. So we're talking about 500,000 illegal settlers on confiscated Palestinian land. And, I mean, Haaretz at least talks about some things, and in some respects, and some of the writers do a fine job. But this never even gets mentioned in the U.S. dominant media. None of this is even mentioned. If you ask a typical person in the U.S., Ramsey, as you know and I know, bring up the subject of settlements in the West Bank, and their eyes would glaze over. They would have no idea what you're talking about.
Exactly. That is part of the propaganda I was referring to earlier, Steve. And I know that the word propaganda sounds very loaded, but it really is that, and nothing else but that. East Jerusalem has not just been annexed by Israel illegally after the 1967 war, but there has been an insistent attempt on annexing Jerusalem or occupied East Jerusalem, Arab East Jerusalem, from memory as well. References are barely made to Jerusalem anymore. The question that is being discussed constantly is West Bank and West Bank settlements. Jerusalem is in an issue all of a sudden. Of course, it's a huge issue for both Arabs and Jews, and it cannot be disregarded. However, when we discuss the number of settlements and the number of settlers, the focus is constantly on the West Bank. In fact, if you notice that in various reports by mainstream media in this country, whether we are looking at the Associated Press, Agency France Press, or any others, they nonchalantly make references to the number of settlers in occupied West Bank by referencing 250,000, 300,000, and they forget about the other 200,000 who are living illegally, and again in violation of the Fourth Geneva Convention and numerous other laws in East Jerusalem. And I think when you think about it, any indication of anything, is of the fact that the Israeli narrative regarding East Jerusalem is winning, and we cannot allow that to happen.
Oh, we sure can't. We have to do our best, Ramsey, to keep getting information out to people. And one core thought that's been repeated on this program is that there is no possibility of real peace in the Middle East unless there's an equitable settlement to this situation, the occupation of Palestine, completely illegal and so repressive, aside from a horrendous operation like this late December into January, so-called Operation Cast Lead. And we want to talk about Gaza under siege, which is an absolutely appalling situation. There was something on one of the websites, it may have been Haaretz this morning, Ramsey, where apparently the Goldstone Commission in Gaza investigating war crimes. I don't know what there is to investigate. You spend a day there, you'll know everything you want to know about war crimes. And he's going to write a report. It said something about it. It looks like he'll issue the report in September. Well, I don't know what's taking so long. And, of course, the Israeli propaganda machine will be ready in high gear to refute everything he says and call him a liar.
Exactly. This is typical Israeli behavior. It's been going on for many years, and we don't expect it to cease anytime soon. The way that they reacted to the Goldstone assignment is that they rejected it altogether, saying that nothing good comes out of the General Assembly, and nothing comes out good ever comes out of the Human Rights Commission that is designated and assigned by the General Assembly. Therefore, we should not expect Goldstone to be an honest and fair man, despite the fact that Goldstone has an impressive resume in the past as a judge and as a human rights judge with an international reputation, and the fact that Mr. Goldstone is Jewish himself. And I think the fact that he was Jewish himself perhaps caught the Israelis by surprise, in the sense that, you know, anything is usually dismissed as anti-Semitic, and the fact that Goldstone is a respected Jewish judge kind of really created a bit of confusion. So they kind of avoided the whole anti-Semitism thing, and they just spoke about fairness and justice. But the fact is, Goldstone is going to come up with his report, and you know, I think it's fair to expect that the report is going to talk rather at length about Israel's violation of the human rights and the committing of war crimes, in the Gaza Strip. Although I also expect it to be a bit political in the sense, you know, that in order for Goldstone's report not to be completely dismissed, there would be a need for, you know, talking about Hamas's violations of this and that, and that is to be expected. Now, what Israel is most likely going to do, and I'm not guessing, but rather kind of talking from past experiences, is that they are going to reject the part of the report that talks about Israeli war crimes and crimes against the humanity in the Gaza Strip, yet at the same time exploit the few segments of the report that are going to talk about Hamas's violations of international law. And this is, again, this is how the Israeli PR machine works, and they work very well in that regard. And here's the sad and frightening fact, Steve, is the fact that mainstream media are going to pick up the Israeli response and thus the focus on what Hamas has or hasn't committed in the Gaza Strip, while the reports focused on the Israeli violation of human rights will be dismissed by the New York Times or will be included in some inside page that not so many people will be reading. And that's how the Israeli PR machine works so well and work in tandem with the mainstream media.
I think you've got it right on the button, Ramsey. Let's take another break and we'll come back and pick up on this.
This is RVN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour. On with Ramsey Baru, talking about occupied Palestine, the West Bank, Gaza. Ramsey, there's no question that the response, including from the dominant media, oh, my goodness, they, well, we know what they'll say if they say anything, but they'll highlight the fact that the poor Israel, the world's fourth most powerful military, doing nothing more than responding to those homemade Hamas rockets. They have all those F-16s and high-tech tanks and all sorts of weapons and attack helicopters and Hamas, such a threat, Hamas. They instead of military bases, they have whatever they have, buildings, whatever structures are available in Gaza, and they do what they can. And what I want to stress, which is so important to me, is I don't for a moment consider any rockets that Hamas has fired an illegal act. Hamas has not initiated attacks on Israel. What Hamas has done when they've used rockets is to respond legitimately to an Israeli attack. And you've cited and I've cited international law that absolutely gives the right to anyone to respond in self-defense when they're attacked. International law sanctions that. Hamas has observed international law, and I absolutely support what they did. Should they just sit back and let Israeli hell fall on them from the sky, from the ground, and just say, hit me again, and we'll just sit here, and we'll take it as many times as you want to hit me? Oh, my goodness. Well, of course, the media will say that they committed a crime and Israel just acted in self-defense. The truth is exactly the opposite of that. You know it so well, Ramsey.
That's correct, Steve. There are two types of laws that we're talking about here. There's international law, the way it should be interpreted, and there's the law of the jungle, which basically those with the bigger guns can use them in any way and utilize them in any way they find necessary, regardless of the price and regardless of the consequences. And Israel has utilized that law so very efficiently, may I say, for the last 60 years or so. And what happened in Gaza, I think, is a verification of that claim. Even if we are going to believe the Israeli claim, which we do not, even if we are going to actually believe that Israel violated the ceasefires, which they didn't, And even if we want to believe that the Hamas rockets or the rockets by other groups in Gaza have in fact created a threat to the state of Israel in any way, which it hasn't, even if we believe all of that, why should we believe that a country with the kind of military power that Israel has the right to attack a besieged, vulnerable place like the Gaza Strip, a tiny little stretch of land that is blocked from every direction, including the sea and the air, and kill and maim around 5,000, no, around 7,000 people in the matter of 22 days, 90% plus of them are civilians. By what international law, what reference to international law that actually legalize and sanction that type of barbaric behavior, that the use of the illegal weapons, white phosphorus and others that has been used in Gaza, what kind of law, but the law of the jungle, unfortunately. And it's, and it, as sad as this may sound, it is the prevailing law as far as Israel is concerned, because it has the nod of the U.S. and the, you know, hesitant agreement, but still an agreement by various European countries. And these are Israel's main political backers, military suppliers, funders, and so forth. And they are the ones who defend Israeli action in the media afterwards. When you have that type of support on your side, then Israel does not need to reference neither for Geneva Conventions nor General Assembly resolutions nor Security Council resolutions. None of this matters to Israel, because Israel uses the type of law that they know will prevail and will win at the end.
Oh, they will prevail, because the Western community is very supportive, if not 100%, close enough, and the rest of them that may not be happy, who knows, maybe some Western countries, again, I'm only speculating, Scandinavia, certainly the UK, the big ones are pretty supportive of Israel, maybe some of the smaller countries, if they're not supportive, they're very dismissive. Nothing is said, nothing is done, and what's most disturbing is that most Arab states are also supportive or dismissive. Certainly, Egypt is very complicit. Egyptian soldiers have the Rafah border crossing locked down. Last week, Ramsey, I mentioned to you in an email I had on an American academic activist who is encamped on the Egyptian side of the Rafah crosser boarding, and she said on the program, she and other groups, an ad hoc campaign, an ad hoc gathering of activists who want to break the siege, break the Gaza siege, and she said to me, she's living in a tent, that she will stay there until the siege is broken. She's been there over 5 weeks now. She will stay there living in a tent. She could come back to this country and live in comfort, but she will stay in a tent trying to help the poor people of Gaza get that siege broken and have even a modicum of a normal life, which, of course, they don't have now. Let's take another break, Ramsey, and we'll come right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Baroud. Ramsey, in one of your recent articles that you titled Gaza in the Language of Power, well, Israel certainly uses the language of power all the time, and occupied Palestinians pay the price for it. And one of the comments you make in your article is, you say, it's the brute logic that might makes right. Very sadly, it's true. Might makes right, pursued by those with the bigger guns, that continues to menace the Middle East, with Gaza being the most devastating example. My goodness, is it ever. Gaza really is ground zero of the most persecuted spot in all of the Middle East, and there are some pretty repressive governments in some of those countries. Certainly Egypt is one on the U.S. payroll. But Gaza stands out. The people of Gaza have just suffered so much. And you were born in a Gaza refugee camp, so you have family back there. Your sister is back there. How is she doing, by the way?
She's doing okay. She's still doing her job as a doctor, and she's very proud of it, as difficult as the situation is, Steve.
So she's treating people under the great duress of not having the proper equipment, not getting the medications she needs, not getting the essentials that we take for granted in this country. You go to the hospital, you know, a hospital is well supplied with all sorts of doctors and all sorts of medicines and all sorts of equipment, and whatever you need, you can get down at the hospital.
Exactly.
And that's the way it should be in Gaza and the West Bank, but it's not that way, because Gaza has just literally been squeezed to death. But your sister, I guess, is operating doing heroic work under those kinds of conditions.
And you know what, this is precisely what it is, Steve. I mean, just the fact that you know, our doctors here, any city, any major city here in the United States, you know, you have a case, you treat it based on the skills you have and based on what is available to you. And if that case is something you cannot handle, there is certainly a hospital that is better equipped and has perhaps better skilled doctors who can deal with it. When you live in an environment where you have thousands of people basically needing urgent treatment because of wounds they sustained during the Israeli onslaught, and they go to very few hospitals in Gaza that are already under-equipped, and they lack access to any better equipped or better skilled place anywhere, whether in the West Bank, in Israel, in Egypt, or any other place in the world, and you see your patient sometimes bleeding to death, or basically all you could do is just to try to minimize their pain as they die, and somehow maintain your sense of sanity as a doctor, and carry on and keep coming to work and fill your shifts and clock your card in and out every single day. I mean, it's really hard. It's hard for me to fathom, not just because, you know, my sister is one of those doctors, but as an observer of the situation, it's extremely difficult to fathom how do these doctors cope. What compels them? What, you know, to carry on with their mission and day in and day out and with no end in sight, frankly.
Well, I think you posed that question, and yet I know you know the answer as well. Because no matter what the obstacles are, you keep it what you're doing all the time. And I decided that I intend to keep it what I'm doing all the time. And the only way to make progress and to achieve results is to keep at it and encourage more people to do the same thing. And at some point, we hope it'll reach critical mass. And the goals that you and I seek on this and so much more can be accomplished by doing that. But let me give listeners one example of what people in Gaza are going through. The article that you posted, Flami Ramsey, on the ICRC,
yes,
saying Israel traps Gazans in desperation and despair. The fact that adequate access to health care is so inadequate for people under the most extreme situations. And I quoted one 26-year-old woman named Doa. And she's typical of somebody in great duress. She has pancreatic cancer. She needs surgery. Israel, except in rare exceptions, won't let people out of Gaza to access it in Egypt or to Jordan, somewhere else where they can get to a fully staffed facility to get the treatment they need. And here's a quote from her. And she says, again, she has pancreatic cancer. And she says, "At first, there was hope that I would be given an operation, but as time went by, I stopped hoping. I am in pain, and I know all too well that my disease is life-threatening." She's waited 6 months for permission, and she hadn't gotten it when this was published in the ICRC report. And most likely, she's still there with no permission to go out to get surgery she desperately needs. So the only motivation I can guess that Israel has, Ramsey, is they obviously they want to make people suffer. They want people to die. They want to commit what I call slow motion genocide, and who's to stop them? Because nobody tries.
Right. And Steve, I mean, think about this. We live in the 21st century, and we are having this conversation. What I mean by that is we have a conversation about people who are dying in mass in a besieged, already impoverished and underdeveloped area for making political choices, for democratically electing a government. And we are having this conversation, and we are having a hard time getting people to even understand what that means, because the mainstream media is, and the corporate media is, not on our side. They are actually siding with the oppressor. They are siding with the one who has inflicted all of this suffering on Palestinians. And most likely, a few months later, Steve, we might end up having, I hope not, but most likely we will end up having the same conversation. We live in this kind of world. And it is so important for us to understand the level of urgency. I mean, it's important that we realize that Gaza is not just a miserable place where people are living miserably in pain and agony and life goes on. This is why civil society has got to do something, has got to take responsibility like never before. And I think that the example you cited of the lady who pitched her tent in the Sinai Desert between Gaza and Egypt and refuses to leave until the siege is over is a prime example of the power of civil society. Because without these guys coming in and out of Gaza, the issue would have died a long time ago. It would have been completely dictated by the Israeli PR machine, by the Israeli propaganda machine. It is these people who are keeping it alive, and we need to keep it alive. We need to, really, in order for us to keep hope alive in Gaza, as cliche as this may sound, but this is the reality. Without the help and support of the outside world, the steadfastness and the resistance of Gaza could eventually peter out, or at best will not be covered, will not be recognized, will not be understood and fathomed by the outside world. This is why our solidarity is urgent and is a key issue right now.
Well, it is, Ramsey, and it's encouraging to me that there are many thousands of Jews around the world, not enough in Israel, but in Israel as well, who are appalled by what's going on, and they want no part of it. And there are groups like Not In My Name. There's a group that is on the streets of Chicago every Sunday, Ramsey, just a couple of blocks from where I live. And they're out there with signs and materials, handout materials, telling people what's going on in occupied Palestine. And they don't have to be there. It's a mixture of people. It's Jewish people. It's Muslim people. And they're united together from different countries. Muslim people from, could be from any country in the Middle East living in this country. So there could be Iranian Americans, Egyptian Americans, Palestinian Americans, all sorts of people, and Chicago Jewish people, Americans who probably lived here all their lives, and they're out in the streets and they're doing this. And often, I think, on a corner opposite them, there are the kinds of people that we oppose so strongly, Ramsey, the people who are so hateful that they'll get out and they'll have their signs up supporting war crimes, as opposed to people who are out there supporting peace and equity and justice and what more important things to be for than those things. And, of course, these things affect us because the same things are going on. Unfortunately, it doesn't matter whether we have a Democrat or a Republican government. We have wars that continue. We have the threat of more wars, an expanded war in Pakistan, the possibility of, heaven help us, if there's a war against Iran. And we have this terrible economic situation going on here. We have social needs going unaddressed. We have people here that are suffering because we have governments. Again, doesn't matter who's in charge. The policy stays the same. And we're paying a terrible price. And it doesn't get better. It keeps getting worse. Plus, my goodness, what goes on in occupied Palestine. The billions of dollars that we give to Israel to kill people. That should shock folks. That should really shock folks. I think it does, people who listen to this program. But we don't have a big TV network, Ramsey, unfortunately. Just imagine what we could do if we had something like that. And they didn't kill us.
Right. And yet, we are persistent. And yet we have our own alternative radio shows like yours, and we have the internet, and we have numerous platforms there for civil society, whether in print or online or radio or otherwise. And we will continue to tell it as it is, and we will continue to convey the message, because it is this work, Steve, that is at the end of the day brought thousands of people to the aid of Gaza, and they are stranded at the Rafah border. It is your work. It is this type of work that has wakened people up, and there are hundreds of delegations that made it to Gaza, and hundreds, if not even thousands more, ready to go to Gaza. Look at the Viva Palestina delegation that left from the UK, hundreds of cars crossed the Northern Africa and finally made it to Gaza. The Viva Palestina USA that just made it to Gaza recently. I know that there is going to be a Viva Palestina Venezuela, and I just received the news that in fact there is a Viva Palestina South Africa. It's global solidarity and support at its best, despite of all the propaganda, despite of all the lies and the deceit and all the blindfolds. Steve, thousands of people, millions of people, in fact, are all over the world standing in solidarity with Gaza, and this is why we tell the Gaza story. We don't tell it just because we want to reminisce. We tell the story because we want to wake people up, and we want to propel them into action, and I think it's working. I think it's delivering.
Oh, it is working. It's slow, Ramsey. We know that. You don't get this train in high gear overnight, but the word spreads, and there are wonderful activists around the world. I mean, imagine traveling across North Africa, trying to get through a border that's locked down by military forces that can be pretty mean and nasty if they want to be. And yet they do what they can. They get whatever aid in that's possible. They don't succeed all the time, but they keep coming back and they keep doing more. And again, we have to think about Gaza. For over 2 years, Gaza has been under siege. So most things are not allowed in. Essential to life things. Even now, Ramsey, I think Israel restricts what comes in to maybe 40 items. Where pre-siege, pre-Hamas election in January 2006, many thousands of items came in routinely. Again, I mean, the kind of things that we could buy here in this country all the time. Go in any store, whether a supermarket, a hardware store, whatever. But these things are prohibited from coming into Gaza. So Gaza was absolutely devastated from Operation Cast Lead. And Israel won't allow in basic things like concrete to do any kind of rebuilding. So people are doing what they can. But people, thousands of homes were destroyed, buildings of all kinds. Israel even attacked fishing boats. What kind of a threat is a fishing boat? Fishermen going out to sea to catch. And Israel restricted how far boats can go out now. I mean, these are Gazan waters. These are Palestinian waters. And Israeli gunboats will patrol, and they will attack a fisherman who's fishing. He doesn't have weapons. He's fishing for a living. That's his job. And Israel does this. And it's the same in all the rest. Civilians are as fair game, Ramsey, as you know, as so-called combatants. And well, I could go on and on and on, and so can you. It's pretty appalling.
Right, and I think it ought to be mentioned, Steve, is that Gaza has been under, I would say, a protracted state of siege for many, many years. You know, in some sense, this is new to Gaza. In other sense, it's old. Gaza has been underdeveloped and has been suffering and collectively punished for so many years. But just when Gazans thought that things cannot possibly get any worse, somehow they got a lot worse, and they continue to worsen. I would guess that the Israelis are, as bizarre as this may sound, is caught in a trap right now, where they really thought that if they pushed Palestinians to the brink of starvation and this level of humiliation, they would, you know, eventually just submit, raise the white flag and kiss the hands and feet of their invaders and say, you know, we'll just do as you please. We will comply politically and in any other form. But they haven't, and they are defiant, and which pushes Israel to do even more and more and more. And we are caught in this situation where where if Israel pulls out of Gaza, or if Israel ends its siege on Gaza, it will officially be the end and the, of Israel's military might, in the sense that you cannot coerce a collective, you cannot coerce a defiant nation. And Israelis have been learning this lesson over and over again, but they are yet to glean the important conclusion of it, that every time you do this, you did it in South Lebanon, it did not work. You have done it against the Palestinians numerous times, and it never worked. You cannot push a nation into submission. Gaza is not going to kneel, and the resistance is going to carry on. Therefore, the only variant that is going to change this equation is something from the outside. There has to be international pressure, and the international pressure is not commenced unless there is enough, as you said, a critical mass out there that makes it clear to our congressmen, to our representatives, whether in the United States, in Canada, in Europe, or elsewhere, that we do not stand for this, that this must end, that political issues can only be resolved through dialogue and through talks, and you cannot get ordinary people involved in your security obsessions or to coerce a faction, a movement, or a government politically. People have to be out of that equation. But unfortunately, people are part of the Israeli equation, and they have been part of it for such a long time, and this has got to end.
It's got to end. I think it's got to come from the grassroots, Ramsey. Governments are so complicit. If governments harm their own citizens, which they do routinely, certainly that's what's going on in this country right now and has for so long, then why should they give a damn about people in another country? They don't. So it's got to come from the grassroots, and we just need mass action that hopefully will build over time. Let's take another break, Ramsey, then come back with your final thoughts.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour. On with Ramsey Baroud. Ramsey, I never fail to be inspired. I think the Palestinian people, a lot of people inspire me, because there are so many people around the world that suffer so much. The people of Haiti concern me so much. But in so many places, there are people living under terrible deprivation, and yet they persist, and they do the best they can, and they struggle for something better than what they have, and they deserve it. I think probably the people of occupied Palestine inspire me the most, which is why I stay on the topic so much. Israel can throw everything at them year after year after year, decade after decade, and there's no way that they will lie down and surrender. They persist. They keep going with one central goal, the goal that you have and the goal that I have. They just want the freedom and equity and justice they deserve. They want a sovereign state, whether it's a one-state solution, a two-state solution. And they want to be treated like human beings, something we all have a right. That's a universal human right, and no one has the right to take that away. And that inspires me to keep going at what I'm doing. Your final thoughts, Ramsey, as we wrap up the hour.
Thank you, Steve. I just want to second what you just said, and also say that I have been trying to document the history of Gaza in my forthcoming book. My father was a freedom fighter, Gaza's Untold Story, which is, by the way, available at Amazon for pre-orders right now.
Is your book done?
It is done, and it's submitted, and it's scheduled to be released in January 2010, but it is available for pre-orders at Amazon and various other online outlets. As I am documenting that book, I am discovering so many things about Gaza, and fascinating facts about Gaza, fascinating things about the history of my own family and how it relates to Gaza and all of that. Thus the name, my father was a freedom fighter. But what really fascinated me the most is the sense of consistency in the resistance of the people of Gaza, the Palestinians of Gaza, which is really, in a way, is an extension of the resistance of Palestinians everywhere. But Gaza is a microcosm of that, a great, a great emphasis on that level of resistance throughout the years. I assure you, and I assure your listeners, Steve, that Gaza is not going down anytime soon. That is for fact. But that by no means should indicate that their suffering should continue or should be allowed to perpetuate any longer. And again, as people who are capable of voicing our concerns and making a difference, whether by going to Gaza or by calling our Congress and our representatives, we need to make it clear that we do not stand for this. At least we need to register our position that we are not that type of people. We do not stand on the wrong side of history, and we are sick and tired of standing on the wrong side of history as far as the suffering of the Palestinian people and as far as the suffering of Gaza in particular is concerned.
Well, I certainly say a big amen to all of that, Ramsey. I just went to Amazon's site, and I see your book, My Father Was a Freedom Fighter, Gaza's Untold Story. It says it'll be released in March 2010. Is that pretty accurate?
Actually, it should be released in mass in January. This is kind of a tentative date, but I know from the publisher that it's going to be out in January 2010.
Well, you know, I want to write about the book, and when you say the time is right, get that out and have you on the program to talk about it. Oh, I can't wait to read the book, Ramsey. I'll send you an email and ask you a couple of questions. But this is on my must-read list. There's no question, and we have to talk about it. Oh, my goodness, we're out of time. We are out of time. You will come back, right?
Oh, definitely. Thank you
for
having me.
Oh, I want you back as often as possible, along with all the other things we have to deal with on this program, Ramsey. My great thanks to you. And I ask listeners to join us again tomorrow, and all week we'll have live programming. Please join us. Thanks, Ramsey.